All right, Reggie, are we ready to go? Very good. How are you readjusting to the new musicless podcast opening and closing? As I said, it makes your life a lot easier, right? One less button to push. I'm getting used to it. It's only been a couple now, but I'm sure we'll be fine. I just don't want to use that generic music. I don't want to use like Match Game 73 music in the background. I mean, you know, I had Elton John music to tie in to the, you know, the theme of the, not so much the theme, but the overall concept of the thing with the name and everything. And without that, I just think it sounds kind of hokey. So I'd rather have no music than some music that doesn't have anything to do with the topic or the name of it or anything else. So we're just going unplugged from now on, Reg. Just my instrument. No musical instruments, just my audio instrument, okay? So one less thing for you, one more thing for me to get through, and I'm sure after a couple more times it'll just be like riding a bike. So are you ready to go? Very good. Now you just have to hit the record button. You don't have to even worry about the music button hitting that thing on time. So your life just got easier. So anyway, all right. Put it in the book. Episode 284, Star Smile Strong. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Of course, it's always important to listen to the podcast, but I would sure love for you to get out there on the streets and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. And of course, if you like what you hear, you can always go back and listen to past podcasts by going to WGNradio.com, hitting the prompt for this podcast. First, you hit the prompt for podcasts in general. Then you go into the next layer, hit the prompt for this podcast, and there they are. Podcasts galore for you to enjoy to your heart's content, to replay and replay as many times as you'd like. Just reload and scroll down, reload and scroll down and enjoy yourself with what we do here on a weekly basis and what we've been doing here for almost 10 years now, 9 and change. We're getting close to 10 and we're getting close to 500 episodes because this is episode 484. So, last week on the podcast, I was talking about going to the Little League World Series in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, and how much I've always wanted to go there, one of those once-in-a-lifetime things. And to be honest with you, I had such a good time that I don't think it's going to be just a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I might go back. Might even go back next year. How about that? Yeah, I really had a good time. But an interesting little side story occurred to me during my travels there. I haven't traveled much this year. Usually we take we traveled earlier in the year. And this is only like the second time that we've gone to O'Hare and gotten on a plane. And so I hadn't been to O'Hare in a while. And you know, there has been slowly some construction going on in very discreet ways here and there. They built a new parking structure and people mover a few years ago. But of course, if you remember, here in Chicago, O'Hare Airport was at one time, back in the 70s and 80s, perennially was considered the world's busiest airport. Once again, Chicago has always had the advantage of population growth, basically, and business growth, and so many other growths. The rise of Chicago as a major city in the country is basically due to its location, being in the middle of the country, because this is a, 3,000-mile-long country, and so it takes a while to get around. And so in the early days of travel, especially with railroads and things like that, Chicago became a good hub. Being centrally located, it was somewhat in the middle between the East Coast and the West Coast. Not exactly, but it was by a waterway, which was also a big deal, Lake Michigan. And it was close to the northern part of the country, also close to the southern part, close to the East Coast, and somewhat, it was a little, it's a little farther to get to the West Coast, not exactly in the middle, but obviously any, most major cities, as they all developed, because ships were such a, the main, you know, transport before the railroads and before air travel, it was ships. And so the biggest, the cities that grew the fastest and became prominent cities in any country, not just in the United States, but everywhere, was were always, you know, were always cities that were based on water, because they became, that's where they can bring in ships and goods, and you can have trade and business and travel and everything else. And so Chicago certainly benefited from that through the years, from not only the location on the lake, one of the great lakes here in the United States, but then certainly when we had railroads and other means of transportation, Chicago became and still is a major hub. And obviously when airports were born, then once again, and air travel became a major business, once again, Chicago was a natural place. And so its location was a huge, huge factor in its growth as becoming one of the major cities in the country. And so O'Hare Field, obviously, at one time was the busiest airport in this country. And because it even had connections around the world, it was up there right there with the busiest airports in the world. Now, since then, over the last 40 years or so, many other cities have seen the advantages that Chicago was having by having a major airport that would have connections to different parts of the country, and the revenues and the jobs and everything else like that, the tourism that would drive. And so now Chicago and O'Hare is not the world's busiest airport, not the country's busiest airport. There are several others that have become bigger. The one most notably is Hartsfield in Atlanta. And once again, the advantages of that is that it's on the East Coast, so international travel is good. Obviously, East Coast travel, and then of course from Atlanta to Chicago as a hub, or going across the country too. I mean, that's, you know, you do that from New York. People do cross country flights from JFK, and so they invested quite a bit of money and became one of the major airports in the country. Now, one of the interesting things is that you'd think that New York's airport, right, LaGuardia, I mean, there's two. JFK is mostly an international airport with mostly international flights, whereas LaGuardia mostly does more domestic flights within the United States. I've traveled to New York over the last 35 years fairly regularly on business and other and leisure and things like that, and I was always shocked, especially the first time I ever went to New York. I think I was in 1990 or 1991. And I was shocked when I landed. I always heard about LaGuardia Airport, LaGuardia Airport, LaGuardia Airport, anything in New York you always hear about. And I remember landing there, and I was really surprised at how dingy and small and old and just kind of outdated it looked. And I was like, wow, this is New York City? This is supposedly the center of the universe? All these, you know, business people internationally or nationally, whatever, flying into, you know, tourism. You fly into LaGuardia, LaGuardia. It's all you heard about, LaGuardia, LaGuardia. And I was so under-impressed that New York, the country's biggest city, in terms of population, obviously, had what it looked like a pretty dingy, old-fashioned, out of date. You could even describe it as decrepit. It was there. Were, I mean, I remember going to some parts where, you know, the things were just not in good repair, and I was like, wow, how could New York City have this kind of an airport? Now, granted, Chicago's O'Hare has gone through many small renovations to add to it. It's, I mean, don't forget, when it started, air travel was relatively new. And, you know, the whole idea of O'Hare Airport being in Chicago is kind of a joke, too, when you think about it. That's really not Chicago. Let's face it. That's in Bensonville, in Rosemont. I mean, they, you know, Mayor Daley, O'Hare ultimately, there's no question, building O'Hare was a great boon to Chicago, as I said before, of making it a world-class city, of making it one of the biggest cities, in terms of travel, business travel, tourism, because of its location. So there's no question that having a big airport that can serve, all those needs and bringing people into it, it was a great move by Mayor Daley. But at the same time, you always have, when you look at the original Mayor Daley, Richard J. Daley here in Chicago, you always have to look at the other side, because most of his motives were never purely about the best things for the city. It was a good thing for the city and best for his political power. And that was the way it was. His political power drove what happened in this city. Now, granted, during his tenure, he built many important types of revenue-generating, job-generating, tourism-generating, business-generating buildings and establishments that helped put Chicago on the map, no question. As I said before, O'Hare Field, huge. Getting early into the flight into the world of aviation as tourism and business, building a major airport right off the bat. We always had Midway Airport there on the south side, but O'Hare was a step up. But, you know, to get that built, they had to annex that land and make it into Chicago. It's hardly Chicago. I mean, when they recently were building new runways, they were building, they were having to buy up homes in Bensonville, okay? And Rosemont is right there. I mean, it's barely Chicago. I really question how much of it. I mean, I wasn't born. I don't know the whole thing, but that really, when you look at the boundaries of Chicago, for O'Hare Airport, it's a very interesting kind of cutout. You know, right now we're hearing a lot in the news about redistricting and how they're redefining populations and things in order for, congressional representation. That's become a big topic here, basically, was going on in Texas, and now they're threatening to do it in other states like California and maybe even here in Illinois. And there's all this gerrymandering and all this annexing and extending boundaries. Chicago, to include O'Hare Airport, it's very far out there northwest. It really, if you look at Chicago being, the downtown area right on the lake, O'Hare, to get to O'Hare, it's not It's not that close. Even on a good day on the highway with the Kennedy, it's, you know, it's a good 40, 45, 50 minutes, if not more than an hour, you know, using the highway and things like that. But my point is that Mayor Daley was like, okay, we're going to build an airport, but it's not going to be in the suburbs. It's going to be Chicago's airport. Not only are we going to get the revenues, but what basically O'Hare Airport was a huge, huge job source. And if anybody knows anything about Mayor Daley's political machine, it was based on patronage, which was, I mean, and it still exists. Maybe it has different names. But basically, it was a kind of a swap of I'll give you a job if you vote for me type of thing. Remember who got you that job? So with the amount of jobs that were now suddenly in the hands of Chicago and therefore Mayor Daley, you could certainly control a lot of votes across the city in terms of giving people jobs at O'Hare. Same thing with McCormick Place. There's no question that the building of McCormick Place, and once again, the location of Chicago, right in the middle, from a business standpoint, made it good business for executives or people going to conventions. It was right in the middle. So if you're coming from the East Coast or from the South or from the North or even from the West, Chicago was you didn't have to spend as much money to fly across the country or drive across the country, or you didn't need to take so much time. Chicago was kind of this middle hub. And so if we've got an airport now, we already have the trains. We've had the trains, you know, from the late 1800s, early 1900s. We had the trains bringing people to Chicago from around the country. Now we've got a big airport to bring people in. Well, if we can bring these people in, let's give them a reason for coming here. So no question. Once again, Mayor Daley built McCormick Place as a major convention hub, and in the 60s and 70s, and even into the early 80s, Chicago was the convention center of the country. There was this big convention center, huge space. You had the transportation hub in terms of getting equipment there via train or via trucks. You had the airport here, getting the people here via train, buses, or then planes, of course, obviously, as air travel continued to grow. And so there's no question the building of McCormick Place was another major move that helped put Chicago on the map nationally as a major city. Tourism, business, no question. But at the same time, once again, McCormick Place, with all the conventions coming in there, all the setups and teardowns and all the transportation and the packing and lifting and all the setting up of the booths and all that. Well, hey, a lot of jobs involved in that. Another patronage haven for Mayor Daley. There's no question that Mayor Richard J. Daley did some good things for Chicago. But if you look behind the veil, most of those things that were good for Chicago were great for him to build, to consolidate, and then to grab onto power and not let it go. So he was doing Chicago a favor, but he was also benefiting greatly from it. And you always have to look at any kind of Mayor Daley major program and wonder what was the real motive there. And I'm waiting still for it's been a long time now. It's been over 50 years, almost 50 years that Mayor Daley passed away in 1976. And I'm still waiting for a real comprehensive and honest appraisal of the Daley years. He's always talked about his legacy is beginning to get a little mixed. But, you know, once again, he was mayor for 20 years and almost 20 years. And, you know, his power was indisputable. He was a kingmaker. There's always stories about how Richard Daley probably stole enough votes from Chicago in the 1960 election in order to get John F. Kennedy elected. John F. Kennedy only won by 5,000 votes nationally. 5,000 votes nationally, okay? You know, don't forget, we've got 50 states. 5,000 votes? That's 100 votes per state. 5,000 votes. That's nothing. So there was always a question whether, because Mayor Daley was a big supporter of John F. Kennedy and the Kennedy family, and there's always stories about that most likely there was a lot of shenanigans in that election, especially in some of the wards here in Chicago that helped tip that election to John F. Kennedy. It was a very, very close election, no question about that, one of the closest in history, if not for then the Bush-Gore in 2000. But anyway, at the end of the day, because of the power that Mayor Daley had, he became a kingmaker, and he rose to national prominence because he was the mayor of the, at that time, the second largest city in the country. And Daley could deliver votes, and Daley could deliver. You know, Chicago is known as the city that works. Well, that basically meant that, you know, your garbage was picked up and your snow was shoveled. But also, Chicago worked for a lot of a small group of people. There was, you know, it's a very clout-heavy city, and it still is. And even when his son, Richard M. Daley, took over, he ran under the guise of a reformer, but he didn't run things much different than his father did. It was just, it wasn't as blatant as it was back in the 50s and 60s and 70s when that's the way politics was viewed. There was not a lot of transparency like there is today. There certainly wasn't as much media coverage to be scrutinized. Everybody knew what was going on. Everybody knew the game. Everybody knew who or what was on the take. And everything ran for a certain group of people very well. But I would argue that the problems that Chicago has right now, especially with its crime, especially on the south and west sides, I believe that that is a definite result of 50 years ago and more during the Daley tenure. Mayor Daley did not invest and did not, he gave enough to the south side for it to survive. But, you know, he built the projects here in Chicago, trying to keep the black community in one area, and these high rises, which led to poverty and crime, and they finally have been destroyed. Robert Taylor Homes, Cabrini Green, and things like that. So there are a lot of kind of racist and segregated policies that took place during the Daley administration, which I believe has led to the gang problem, the crime problem, in both the South and the West sides here of Chicago, because I believe that they were underserved for decades, and that's what happens. And so you just can't, you know, you can't keep kicking the can, but that's another story. But my point is, Chicago, for whatever reason, became a transportation hub. First, because of its railroads, then because of its airport and its convention center and its hotels and all the business built around that. And that's how Chicago got established. Now, in the last 35 years or so, clearly Chicago is no longer the premier convention destination. Because now, wisely, the warm weather cities realize that Chicago has a big disadvantage, a thing called winter. Who wants to go to Chicago in the winter? Before, it was the only place you could go because it was the only place that had the room to put on a car show, to put on a hardware show, to put on a restaurant show where you had people from all over the country with the booths and all the hoopla of a convention, a business convention. So places like Las Vegas and Florida and Houston, San Francisco, and other places, obviously New York has the Javits Center there, people started to say, wait, other cities started to go, well, wait a minute. Why should Chicago get that when, you know, who wants to go there in the winter? And ironically, the auto show, which is one of the biggest trade shows in the country, still is in Chicago, and it's usually in February. It's in the winter, but I guess it's tradition. And we were close to Detroit, so in terms of transporting all the cars from Detroit to Chicago was fairly close. But there's no question that places like Las Vegas, as I said before, and in Florida, and warm weather cities have wisely made a major dent, if not taken away, the title of number one convention city. But there's no question. In the 60s and 70s, Chicago was the convention center of the country, if maybe not the world. But now certainly Vegas has taken that over, or at least, you know, gotten a nice chunk of that, and so have places like Orlando and places in Florida. As I said, New York has many as well. Chicago still has some of the big ones, but they used to have almost all of them. Watch any TV show from the 60s, and you'll hear them say, yeah, I'm going to business in Chicago. I've got to go to Chicago on business. That's all they say. I've got to go to Chicago on business. Because, once again, it's where you can get, you know, you can get there quick. And that's why Chicago became the headquarters and the home for many of the bigger companies in the country initially, because once again of its location. So what I'm getting to is there's no question that Chicago's growth and its continued prominence, still now the third largest city, LA took it over in population about 10, 15, 20 years ago. And there's actually questions that maybe Houston might actually overtake Chicago in terms of popularity or population soon. Once again, Texas has a different climate. We'll see. There's been threats of that for many years, and I'm still not seeing the numbers. But who knows? They might be getting close. But as it stands, even though Chicago at one time had close to 3 million people, now I think it's about 2.7, 2.6 million. It still rates as the third largest city in the country and still is a major transportation and business hub. No question about that. And tourist. I don't know about a tourism. I mean, I still think there's other cities around the country that have become bigger tourist attractions than Chicago, which is part of what I want to talk about too. So, long story short, if that's possible with me. O'Hare Airport, major element of Chicago's prominence, both in its prominence in elevating the city as well as maintaining its position as an international and national city, world-class city, they like to say. So, as I said, I was always surprised at how dingy and antiquated LaGuardia was. New York City, the largest city in the country. I mean, I was so excited to go to New York the first time. I've been hearing about New York, New York, New York for my whole life, and I finally landed there. And when I got there, I was like, that's, you know, you have to remember that airports, you know, transportation complexes, in many cases, are the first impression that a traveler of any kind, whether it's tourist or business person, has of a city. When you land at an airport, you have no idea what the city's, if you haven't been there before, you have no idea yet what the city's going to be like, but this is your first impression. And we all know about first impressions. And so it's like, well, if a city has, if you're welcoming me and say, come here and keep coming back and have a great time, as soon as I get to your city, I should be excited. I should be greeted by something that is exciting and interesting that draws me in to say, wow, I'm someplace cool. And now I've just landed in this cool place. And now what's next? Wow, this airport is pretty cool. This train station is pretty cool. If they go out of the way to make this first point of contact exciting and fun, what's awaiting me when I get to the city in terms of attractions and food and sights and things like that? So to me, if you're a city, your airport, especially in these days, everybody's flying, your airport is a huge PR and marketing tool. It's not just a place for plans to land. It is a reflection of the city itself. And so when I saw how dingy LaGuardia was, I was very disappointed. And I was like, wow, is all this hype about New York City that I've always heard my whole life, has it been overblown? Because how could New York City, the city that never sleeps, if you could make it there, you make it anywhere, how could it have this small, dingy airport? The ceilings were low. I would land, I fly on American Airlines, and the American airline terminal was narrow. The ceilings were low. It felt like I was in it was in a Mayberry airport. I'm like, this is New York? It did not feel impressive. It did not feel like, wow, I'm in the Big Apple. Now, as I said, Chicago has updated itself. It didn't start that way. I mean, O'Hare Airport is probably 60 some years old now. So it's gone through renovations. The biggest one was several years ago. They redid the United terminal and things like that, and they built the international terminal a couple of decades ago. But now, you know, you can't let things sit. In today's world, as I said many times on this podcast, we always go for the shiny new object, and things become antiquated very quicker than they used to. And people's expectations are higher today. And there's more revenue streams now, too. I mean, my gosh, when you go to an airport today, it's almost like going to a casino in Vegas. When you land at a gate now, in most remodeled and renovated and 21st century newer airports, before you ever get, say you land, before you ever get to the baggage claim or the ground transport to leave, you go through several mall-like areas. It's like a mall. There are restaurants. There are stores. There's not just a couple of places to get a quick. I mean, these are sit-down restaurants. These are franchise restaurants. These are nice places and restaurants. That's all you see now in airport terminals. Before airports, when they were first built, were very functional. You got in, you sat down, you waited, and you got on your plane and you left. Now there's obviously airport lounges, there's bars, there's restaurants, there's massage places. I mean, you name it. They've become like mini malls. The shopping mall is gone and it's been replaced by the airports. A big place where there's places to eat and relax and watch sporting events. I mean, and do whatever you want to do. Like I said, get a massage. You can go to the airport now and spend a day there without even, although you can't get into those places without a ticket anymore. But my point is that whether you're coming or going, you have to go to even to get to your gate when you check in. You've got to walk now several miles, and you are bombarded by every kind of store, big, almost big complexes, food courts, individual restaurants, bars, you name it. It's like a giant Dave and Buster's or a giant Chuck E. Cheese on steroids. You almost forget that you're there to get on a plane and leave. Before, as I said, 50, 60, 70 years ago, these airports were just built functionally. There weren't all these accoutrements, if you will. Now, all you hear about from when you hear about airport renovations is they're adding gates and they're adding restaurants. And so several years ago, and I was not surprised, I don't know what took them so long. I think it was around 2016 or so, New York finally announced that, you know, 2015, 2016, they finally announced that they were going to go through a major redevelopment and renovation of LaGuardia because it needed it. It was a rundown, dingy place. It was hardly a place that was representative of what New York was selling about New York excitement. I love New York, the Big Apple, Times Square, everything like that. It did not reflect that. It did not get you excited to get to the city. As I said, airports, especially in today's world, they need to be tourist attractions themselves. They are PR and marketing vehicles. They're not just a hub for the transportation. That's important, no doubt. But in today's world, airports especially are the first impression that a traveler has about where they're at. And do I ever want to come back to spend all that money, which we, you know, cities love tourism. Generates money for hotels and restaurants and transportation and you name it. So New York finally announced in 2016 that they were going to redo LaGuardia, and it was going to take about 7 or 8 years. It was a cost of $8 billion. I mean, huge. Yeah, it needed. It was practically rebuilt. And having been to New York on many occasions, I mean, I continue to go there, it was finally finished in around 2023. The majority of it. So, from its announcement to its end, it took about 8 years, maybe 9 years or so, and change by the time it was finally done. But it literally had to be rebuilt. I mean, things were knocked down. There were times when I went to LaGuardia where you were in a covering, but I didn't know where I was. We were definitely walking miles and outside. We could see that you were walking on concrete. We're probably in parking lots somewhere, because of different terminals and gates being rebuilt, and so people had to be rerouted to different areas. It was quite inconvenient for a while. Now, New York got lucky to some extent because of COVID. They kept building and renovating during COVID, while at the same time, there wasn't a lot of air traffic, not a lot of people flying during COVID, especially the first couple of years. So they were able to get a lot of work done without disrupting a lot of people's flight experience either, because there's nothing worse than going to an airport where there's a lot of renovations going. Because as I said, today airports, especially the newer ones, are big enough as it is to get to the baggage claim or to the ground transportation or the rental car thing. And you got to walk enough because, as I said, they're almost like a casino. They're tempting you along the way with, go to this restaurant. Oh, go get this coffee. Oh, get this Aunt Annie's. Oh, get this Cinnabon and things like that. And so, but then during a construction and a major construction overhaul, then they're, as I said before, they're rerouting people in different ways. You're walking in places you never even knew existed because they're building where that will be, which was convenient, but for the time being, it doesn't exist. So we got to take you a long way around to get to wherever you're going. And so New York got lucky to some extent for COVID because they weren't really putting a lot of people, as many travelers as they could. They weren't inconveniencing them because they're for a good year and a half, there probably wasn't a lot of air travel. But anyway, I have to say that now that it is done, and I have been to New York several times since it's been finished about 2023 or maybe even just a little last year, I have to say it's gorgeous. It's a beautiful airport. Now it is an airport worthy of the biggest city in the world. In fact, it's won many design awards. Its main concourse is beautiful. And so it looks modern. It looks big. It looks impressive. It looks inviting and it looks exciting. And it's a great PR tool to say, if you think, welcome to New York. That's one thing about Vegas, and Vegas has done a good job of, Vegas's airport was kind of small and dingy, and over the last 15, 20 years, they've done a nice job. It used to be called McCarran, I think now it's called Reed. But there's one thing about, when you land in Vegas, there's still kind of older looking parts to it. But when you land in Vegas, you know you're in Vegas because you can hear the slot machines in the terminal. As soon as you get off the plane, you get into the terminal, you hear, you know you're in Vegas. And that's my point. When you land in LaGuardia now, you go, yeah, I'm in New York. This looks like a place. This has gravitas. Yeah, this looks like it should be the Big Apple. And so in some cases, O'Hare Airport does have that, but it's, as time goes on, everything gets old and it gets old fast here in these days. And so with O'Hare, and especially with newer airports being built, as I said, like Hartsfield and the other one in Denver and other major cities rehabbing their own airports, O'Hare was starting to look, not only was it falling in the busiest airport ratings, but it was starting to show its age again, even though it's gone through some facelifts, not some major renovations necessarily, but some substantial facelifts over the years. It's added more runways, but in terms of the passenger experience, it hadn't really updated enough. And it was starting, especially when you're building some of these new places with these new designs that are much airier, with big windows and high ceilings and swooping kind of architectural designs. And then you get to O'Hare and you go, well, yeah, it's okay, but it's not like blank. It's not like blank. And as I said, today's world, especially, we're such a visual world, we react to that stuff. And so rightly, Chicago realized, even though it's going to take a multi-billion dollar project to either even keep our standing, we've got to upgrade O'Hare Airport. And so, I'm sure that it was kind of nudged by the fact that New York finally, like I said, in 2015 or in 2016, they made this announcement that they were going to redo LaGuardia. I'm sure Chicago said, well, if New York's can do it, then we better do it. Because they knew that New York now was going to do it in a big, big way. I mean, there's no question that New York let LaGuardia get run down to the point of embarrassment. So with New York's image, that when they redid this, they were going to make sure they did it right now and they were going to dazzle people. And they have. And when you land in LaGuardia today, I think you will be rightly impressed. So I'm sure that, once again, with Chicago's constant chip on its shoulder with New York, when they heard that New York was going to going to completely rebuild, basically, LaGuardia, I'm sure that it got then-Mayor Rahm Emanuel, it got his attention to say, well, wait a minute. We always got to keep up with New York, right? It's pizza, it's sports teams, it's the whole thing. So in 2018, Rahm Emanuel, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, announced this $8.5 billion renovation, reconstruction at O'Hare. And in 2018, it was supposed to be done by 2026. So even there, that's an eight-year project, which was similar to the way that they predicted the New York one. It was going to be about a nine-year total project at $8 billion. And so a couple years later, Chicago says, yeah, well, ours is going to be 8.5. And it's going to take around the same time, about 8 years. They announced it in 2018, and the projections were it will be done by 2026. Well, what year is it now? 2025. I don't know if you go to O'Hare Field a lot or not, but have you seen some finished renovated buildings? Have you seen $8 billion worth of changes at O'Hare Airport? I haven't. Well, not surprisingly, when I got to O'Hare a few weeks ago, hadn't been there in a while, I suddenly noticed that, you know, Terminal 2 and the part of Terminal 3, which is kind of blended by Terminal 2, suddenly all the stores that were there were gone. It was all just, you know, they were gone, and you could see there was construction walls up, that there's something going on behind it. And all of a sudden, it's like, uh-oh, something's going on here. Finally, this project was announced in 2018, and I haven't seen, like, when is this happening? When are we going to see big buildings torn down and new buildings built? Where are we going to see something? I keep driving to O'Hare, and I see the same stuff. I'm not seeing whatever happened to this renovation. And so when I came home, I was like, okay, they're finally doing something, it seems. But I'm like, I remember this being announced during Rahm Emanuel's mayoral reign. You know, all politicians, as I've said many times, all politicians love to have groundbreaking ceremonies. Love it. The big scissors, the golden shovels. They love to announce a new project. Where politicians and government has a problem is actually delivering on those. They love the big scissors. They love the golden shovels. They love the big announcements. They're not as big on talking about overruns, delays, or sometimes failed projects all. You don't hear about that as much. Oh, you hear about the announcement, though. You see the big scissors. You see the big ribbon. You see the golden shovels. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to do this. And then there's those of us who actually look to see, what have you done? And a lot of times you don't see the results. You can't just say you're going to do something. You got to do it. And that's where a lot of governments and politicians fall very short. So when I was at O'Hare, I'm looking around and I'm saying, okay, I'm seeing some initial signs that something might finally be going on here. So when I got home, I decided to use the internet as what it should be used for. Not creating content of, you know, cat videos or, you know, hitting fathers in the groin with a wiffle ball, or jumping, you know, skateboarding on a railing or whatever. I was actually going to use the internet for what it was initially meant for, which was to access information. Wow. Imagine that. Huh. You know what? The internet still does that. Believe it or not. I know many people don't realize that anymore because they rarely use it for that. But yeah, you know, this internet thing is a pretty good informational tool as well. It's not just a place for you to exhibit all your narcissism and arrogance. It actually was a resource and an informational tool. And believe it or not, that's what I used it for. And you know what? It still works in that way. So I went on to see, when was this announced? Sure enough, it was in 2018, Rahm Emanuel. Now, how many mayors have we had? Rahm Emanuel, Lori Lightfoot, and now Brandon Johnson. This is our third mayor since this huge and very important project for Chicago's image and its future and its revenue. I mean, this the renovation of O'Hare and keeping O'Hare a vibrant, busy place is a key to Chicago's economy and livelihood and lifeline and prominence. This is no small thing. We are on our third mayor since it was announced, and now I'm finally seeing some kind of tangible work being done. I know there's a couple of gates, newer gates, that are farther out, but I'm talking about major structures. Major structures. This is going to be a huge, huge $8 billion redesigning. They're building an entirely new global terminal. Right now, there's the international terminal. It looks like LaGuardia did. It's outdated. It's not impressive at all. It's more functional than it is exciting. So they have brought in world-class architects. I think Jane Gang, who's one of the prominent Chicago architects, one of the hot architects now, done some prominent buildings in the city, won awards, originally designed it. I don't know if her original design is still around. Hopefully it is in some ways. But anyway, I'm talking about some impressive structures. I'm talking about when I'm driving to O'Hare, I'm going, wow, what's that? There may have been some initial progress on this, but nothing of a wow factor. Because there's a lot of wow factors in this whole project. There hasn't been a lot of wow factors that I've seen since 2018. Now, perhaps, I thought, we're going to start to see the beginnings of some wow factors, because I'm seeing some tangible evidence that some kind of construction in a major way is taking place. When you've got, miles of walls suddenly and business is gone and construction looks like it's happening. So as I said, I came home and I looked it up, and sure enough, 2018, Rahm Emanuel announced it. $8.5 billion supposed to be done by 2026. So then I decided, well, it's obviously not going to be done by 2026. It was an 8-year project to begin with, and nothing's been built. So what's going on? So I looked up I went on the internet machine, and I typed in, completion date for O'Hare renovation project. Now, I'm telling you, I watch the news every day. I'm still a news junkie. I watch the news every day. I pride myself on being up on all kinds of different news. Now, I don't know if I missed this, or I can't believe I did. I don't know. Maybe I wasn't paying. I don't know. Maybe I was out of town. I don't know. But I had no idea that last year, around this time, right now, in early September, it was announced that the O'Hare renovation project was going to be delayed. And due to overruns, of course, with supply chain. Of course, they used that whole, that COVID thing. They use supply chain all the time. You kept hearing about that. In typical Chicago tradition, now what was supposed to be finished next year was now completely reimagined with a new price tag and a new completion date. The original $8.5 billion project announced in 2018 would now cost $12.1 billion. And it would, the now expected time to finish this project would be 2034. Okay, basically another nine-year project starting in 2025 with the clock beginning to tick. 2034. That's 10 years from now, because it's not going to be done by then. That's going to take at least 10 years from today. Totally from when it was announced. Let's say that it ends. Let's say it is completed by 2034. That means it will have taken 16 years since it was first announced. Is that acceptable? Why isn't there, I don't understand. Have we in Chicago here just become so used to corruption and lack of attention and lack of professionalism, and we know that it's a clout-filled city and everybody has their fingers in every pot, especially when people hear $8.5 billion project, everybody in this city is licking their chops and rubbing their hands and saying, how am I going to get a piece of $8.5 billion? And everybody's hand is out, and a lot of those hands ultimately do get greased. And we have just come to accept this in Chicago. And Chicago has been a corrupt city for years, but it was perfected once again during the Richard J. Daley years. It was perfected then. But Chicago has always had dubious governments. How do you think Al Capone was able to run this city and basically be the quasi-mayor of this for decades? So it's not just Mayor Daley's fault, but Mayor Daley made it into an art form. There's no question about that. And it still exists. It's just not as blatant as it was. Mayor Daley made no bones about the clout that was going on and the influence and the corruption. He just, his thing was, yeah, but you know what? Your garbage is cleaned up. Your streets are clean. Your streets are I'm giving you a nice your neighborhood is clean, and your garbage is picked up and your snow is shoveled and your streets are clean. So, I'm providing you the services. Me and my friends might be becoming a zillionaires here, but you're getting what we'll take care of you too. And it still goes on. And we all just laugh about it here in Chicago. Oh, you know how Chicago. Why is that the Chicago way? Why do we accept that? In my mind, this announcement that this O'Hare deal, this is a huge part of the city's image and economy and livelihood. And we just casually except the fact that this is going to wind up being a 16-year project from when it was announced. It's going to be $4 billion more, $3.5 billion more than it should cost. How is this acceptable? I don't see anybody. I don't see people losing jobs. I don't see any public outrage. Everybody's protesting about everything. Why don't we protest about how horrible this O'Hare renovation project has been handled? Because O'Hare is important to the future of this city in many ways, as I've just discussed, in terms of tourism and business and image and jobs and revenue, you name it. $8.5 billion. Now it's 12. That's a huge, huge, important project. And we just, okay, it won't be done for till 2034. There are some people, I'm crossing my fingers, there are some people that will not see the new O'Hare. Right? I mean, I hope everybody listening now is alive in 10 years. But that's how far this is stretching, and this will be taking 16 years. If it does get completed by 2034. And we don't, you know, we've got this Kennedy Expressway thing going on. Oh, it's delayed. Oh, the lanes were supposed to be open by Christmas. Now they'll be opened in March. I mean, we just go, okay, whatever. No outrage. We're outraged by a lot of other things, but I don't know. We have just become so complacent and so accepting of mediocrity in terms of how projects and government is run, and I don't understand it. There should be so much outrage. When I saw that this project was supposed to be done in 2034 now, and the price tag went up $3.5 billion, I couldn't believe it. And I'm talking to people. Did you know? And oh, I didn't even hear. No, just buried. Ironically, 3 days after I came back. 3 days. It was not a surprise that there was all these hints of construction or something going on there, because 3 days later, I came back on a Friday, and on the coming Monday, much to my surprise, when I watched the news, as I say, always do, there was Mayor Johnson and dignitaries having a press conference to talk about the groundbreaking for the global terminal. So what I was seeing, yes, now little did I know that 3 days, I mean, after my outrage, that 2 days later after my outrage, they were announcing the beginning of now this major construction, the first phase of this major construction of this huge deal, the global terminal, which is going to be, at least by the architectural renderings, a very impressive, modern-looking, into the 21st century for Chicago. But guess what? That's going to take, it's they're starting to do work now. That won't be done until at least 2028. So we got at least three, and you know it's going to take longer than that, because that's the Chicago way. And I'm like, wow. I'm just in shock at how we accept these things. You know, there's a lot of people today, especially younger people, you don't realize. If you go downtown Chicago, right, there's Millennium Park. Now, if you're in your early 20s or even in your late 20s, you don't remember that Millennium Park, where it is today, was basically an eyesore, right? On the downtown area, right off Michigan Avenue, a huge eyesore of an abandoned railroad tracks that were, I don't even know what was going on there. I remember just seeing it. It was just an eyesore for years, right? So mostly there was some government, funds, but it was mostly, donations from the private sector. Based on all the names around there, the Pritzkers paid for most of that, which is not a surprise considering that they own the Hyatt and they've got more money than God. You see the Pritzker Pavilion, the Pritzker this, the Pritzker that. The Pritzker family paid for most of Millennium. I'm surprised it's not even called Pritzker Park. Maybe someday it will be. But it's called Millennium Park, right? Because the idea was it was announced in 1998. This is my point again. 1998, maybe 97-ish, And this is now Mayor Richard M. Daley. And he says that we are going to call this new, urban gathering place, this exciting thing right on Michigan Avenue in the shadow of the skyscrapers, in the shadow of Lake Michigan, in the shadow of the Art Institute, right on the main drag of Michigan Avenue, this beautiful multi-use park with art and open space and fountains and just the Bean and all this other stuff. Oh my gosh, it's going to be great. And it's going to be called Millennium Park, and it's going to be opened by the Millennium, right? Everybody was all excited for the year 2000. It's going to be called Millennium Park. It's going to be opened by the Millennium. Anybody know when Millennium Park finally opened, folks? Yeah, I believe it was 2004. Almost 5 years after the Millennium. Now it's called Millennium Park. Nobody remembers. We all assume that it was named and it was finished by the Millennium. But the fact of the matter was that that project was 3 or 4 years delayed and overrun. It was supposed to be done by 2000. It was announced in 97 or 98. It was supposed to be done by 2000, and it didn't get done till about 2004. And they conveniently still called it Millennium Park, even though the Millennium was almost 5 years past. But we don't care. And now that's ancient history and nobody cares. And meanwhile, you know, whatever. You know, I was watching I was watching some kind of a documentary on something. And they were, it was a documentary about Chicago being the candy capital of the world. In the early 20s and 30s and 40s, many companies like Mars and Wrigley's and Brock's and places like that were founded or were headquartered here in Chicago. And Chicago really was the candy capital of the world for many decades. And this historical kind of overview was, as I said, talking about going into the 20s and the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. And as they were showing old footage of Chicago during that era, those eras, right? They were showing some major, sites and buildings of the time, right? To get an impression of Chicago being this hustling, bustling metropolis, right? In the 30s and 40s and 50s and things like that, and 60s. So they were showing this vintage footage of Chicago from 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years ago. And guess what they showed? The Wrigley Building on Michigan Avenue. The Lions at the Art Institute. And Buckingham Fountain. And when I saw those three areas being shown as an example of Chicago and the hustling and bustling of the city and the growth of the city and this major metropolis, it dawned on me that if people today were to make a quick montage of downtown Chicago, they would still show the Lions. They would still show Buckingham Fountain, and they would still show the Wrigley Building. Now, yes, they would show Millennium Park. The Bean has become a huge, attraction, more than anything else in that park. It seems, to me, Millennium Park is very underwhelming at the end of the day. It's certainly not Central Park. Let's not even, with our Chicago comparisons of New York. Don't even try to compare that. It's better than the eyesore than it used to be. These old tracks that were just sitting in the middle of downtown. It looked horrible. There's no doubt that it's an upgrade from that. But I don't know how great it's certainly a meeting area. But I don't go ooh ah. The Pritzker Pavilion is obviously very cool because it's a Frank Gehry design, which was once again mostly due to the Pritzker family. So to me, Millennium Park is at least it's a nice place to walk through. There's some vibrancy there, but to me, it's a little underwhelming. I mean, the Bean has become a big tourist attraction, but I'm going, what has been built in the last 25 or 30 years, aside from Millennium Park, which was delayed and had overruns, but in terms of the Chicago, downtown Chicago, right? That's, I mean, you could talk about the neighborhoods, but a city is defined by its downtown area, really. What, I mean, aside from the Trump Tower, once again, whether you love the guy or not, I don't care. He built a hell of a building there. Used to be this little dumpy little Sun Times building. The Trump Tower is a beautiful building, and it went up very quickly. It didn't have overruns, and it really adds to the Chicago skyline. Now, once again, you can hate Donald Trump all you want. I'm not talking about politics. I'm talking about a beautiful building that adds to the Chicago skyline. But, you know, we had in the 70s, we had a lot of buildings. We had the John Hancock building and the then Sears Tower, the Willis Tower. And then everything kind of stopped. The Trump Tower is the last one that's been built. And now that's been at least 10 years or so. And Millennium Park was, say, 2004. So that's 20 years ago, and it's fine, but I wouldn't fly from Paris to come to Millennium Park. I would fly from Chicago to Paris to see the Louvre, but I wouldn't fly from Paris to Chicago to see Millennium Park. It's better than it was, but it's not jaw-dropping. And so once again, I'm looking around at Chicago. I mean, McCormick Place, they continue, you know, it was built so to be serviceable to as I said before, to get patronage for Mayor Daley. The original one was an ugly black building on the south side there. They've tried to upgrade it, make it look a little better, but certainly new convention centers in Vegas and other places look a million times better than that. And I'm looking around Chicago and I'm saying, what is happening here? What building are we doing? How are we moving forward? The way you can judge a city's vibrancy and its success is by its outward look. Is there activity going on? And I'm not seeing a lot of that stuff going on in Chicago, and I don't see anybody complaining about it. It seems to me that we're just stuck in neutral. Meanwhile, other cities are building other things. And so I look at this. Look what's going on with the Bears. They announced they bought that land in Arlington Heights 3 years ago. There hasn't been one grain of dirt that has been moved in the actual building of that. We still don't know. 3 years later. They knocked down all of the Arlington Park thing. It's just sitting there for 3 years, and they're still debating it. And even if they broke ground today, which they're not going to do, the earliest they're going to break ground is sometime next year. If that happens, we were told it was going to break ground this year, so there's no guarantees. So once again, if the O'Hare project is supposed to be done in 2034, I have a good bet here that the new Bears Stadium will probably not be open until at least 2031. I guarantee you, there's so much. If they're going to build that out there, there is so much infrastructure that has to be built in addition to this $2 billion stadium. And you don't think there's going to be delays? This O'Hare project is going to be wind up being delayed 16 years. If the Bears can't get this thing started, you think it's going to be on time? The Bears can't even win 7 games in a season. You expect that same organization to build a stadium? The new president and CEO that they brought in, he was supposed to bring. Oh, he helped build the stadium in Minnesota. So he's going to come to Chicago and get our stadium built for us. Oh, really? How's that going? How is that guy not fired? How is Kevin Warren not fired? He was brought into Chicago mainly as the CEO to get a stadium built. Still hasn't happened. Still hasn't happened. Not even close. We've been debating about building it in Chicago somewhere, but you know what's going to happen. The Bears bought 300 acres of land in Arrington Heights. For what? You know that's where they're going to build it. Why are we playing games? 3 years later, this guy is president. He didn't fire Matt Eberflus before last season, which he should have done. So from a football standpoint, he failed. And he hasn't, and his main thing for being brought to Chicago was to build a new stadium. And that's been an ongoing failure. How does this guy keep his job? I don't get it. Because I got news for it. I'll tell you right now. The season won't start for a couple of weeks, another month or so. Another couple of weeks, I'm sorry. In fact, this week. Let me tell you right now. The Bears are going to be 5-12 this year. Put it down. Book it. 5-12. The Bears will be 5-12. They're not going to do any better than they did before. They still have an untested, glorified coordinator who got the head coaching job. They still have a questionable quarterback. And they still have horrible ownership, who still doesn't have a new stadium even being close to being built. The Bears are the worst performing and the worst run organization in the last 40 years in the NFL. That's not opinion. That's just fact. And for all these hype and all this, Ben Johnson is your savior, 5-12. That's going to be their record, if they're lucky. I'm being generous with five wins based on their unproven quarterback, their head coach, NFL head coaching experience, new coach, and their difficult schedule. They'll be lucky to win five games. Remember where you heard it first. But my point is, we can't get anything built here because everybody has their hands out. Everybody gets a piece of the action. And the citizenry doesn't seem to mind. That's what makes me crazy. How are these people that are in charge who have continually failed? How do they keep their jobs? How do they stay in their jobs? And how do they continue to fail up? It's so aggravating. This city deserves better. And sadly, this city accepts less. And I do know why. Because it does go back to Mayor Richard J. Daley. Mayor Richard J. Daley gave Chicago a mindset that we're going to give you just enough. Chicago never tries to dazzle. Chicago doesn't do big well. Look at where we came in the Olympic during Richard M. Daley's, in the Olympic bid. Oh, Chicago was supposed to host the Olympics. Remember that BS? We came in fifth in the bids. Fifth out of five countries. Chicago came in fifth. Wasn't even a factor. And oh, were we pounding our chest, we're going to have the Olympics. No. Because people looked around and said, this city isn't going to be able to build an Olympic village in 4 years or 8 years. We could see the way this place goes. When people from the outside world come and look at the way Chicago works, they go, how does that place even working? But here in Chicago, and I've lived here my whole life, we just seem to lay down and accept the corruption, accept the mediocrity in government and leadership, accept the failure, accept the delays, accept the overruns. Oh, well, we have pizza. We have hot dogs. 2034, I hope everybody listening today will be able to see and experience the new global terminal and the entire project in 2034. But wow, 16 years, New York City did it in 8. How come it's taking us, hopefully, from when it was announced, it took them 8 or 9 years to rebuild LaGuardia? How come in Chicago it's going to take us 16 years and a $3.5 billion added expense? Yeah, but our pizza is better than New York's. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 384. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic from the end of my mind to your ears.